This is in Thailand.
Yes.
I have it labeled as Bangkok.
Yes. And Vespa scooters, the colors in this, look at the yellows and the blues and the reds. And if I could see which kind of camera it was, I could tell you if it was through the window or not. But trying to capture things the way they are, not make them beautiful, make them pretty, just the way they are. And this really does capture some of the colorful chaos of Bangkok.
And I guess we haven't really talked about Thailand, so if you want to explain a little bit about why you have pictures of Thailand.
Because I go there. No, because, well, my wife is from Thailand. I've gone there since 2002? No, 2000. 2000. And I've gone there in sabbatical. We've gone there to stay. Margaret's gone there twice. We've gone from Thailand over to India and Laos, and it's an amazing place to go. A very rich photographic place. I have many websites, and I've learned a lot about photography from there. One cool thing about Thailand is that the people love to have their pictures taken, and so if you really, you don't feel inhibited by taking pictures. In fact, you feel encouraged to take pictures, and so it really, if you want to take spontaneous street photography and you want to get started, Thailand's an amazing place to begin.
And I guess one thing that resonates with me is I notice about the culture is the lack of the Western ideals of kind of staying out of the spotlight.
Yeah. It's just people just, there's a real joy and a laughter about sharing photographs and images and stuff like that. It's a real cool place.
So then going on to your Indian photos is Bihar 1.
And this was in Calcutta, coming out of the hotel. And there's so many cultural conflicts and contradictions and colors and amazing things and sophisticated ads and chaos and craziness. And the color in India is amazing, such that the color really does become what I resonate with in a lot of those pictures. So this shows sort of an ideal Monte Carlo in India, but if you looked around you, there's nothing related to that in anything you'll see on that street or in any of the people you'll see, but that ad is still the ideal that is being presented. But the colors, just the colors and the shapes of things, the colors make you look through the picture. So I'm not against color, it's when the color becomes what you're taking a picture of, not hiding what you're taking a picture of. Okay, next one.
This is Bihar 2.
Yes, and that's just a broom. And it's a beautiful broom with leather and the way it's sewn and the shape of it. And I love taking pictures of the details of everyday things. In Thailand, I've taken a lot of pictures of things at Jit's house and things like knives or coconuts or the water bucket. And Jit's brother said, well, why do you want to take pictures of that? Well, because the form and shape and texture of it is beautiful. You know, and it also expresses the small details of things express the big thing. Look at the work in that. The next picture.
Bihar 3.
And this was, we traveled with monks, and this was in at a temple, and we were going to climb up this old stupa from probably 3,000 years ago, and the monk had bright yellow socks. It was cold there, but I just loved the color and the relationships, but also just yellow socks and a monk and the color of the robes. I think it's just cool. Okay.
So this is in Bird Point from the 70s?
Yeah. In Bird Point, when I lived in Anchorage, it's one of the most beautiful places. Now it's a park. It's harder to get to. But I would drive down there maybe two or three times a month. this rock is a big arch, and it fell down soon after I took this. And you, so you realize even though things are big and substantial, that the, how time changes. In Bird Point, I put different websites up. Now you have to jump over fences or run down the railroad track or other things to go see it, but it was one of my special places where I would go so many times that I could see the changes over time, similar to the way I feel about Kramer's Field now. Hatcher Pass area is another one like that, that where I really resonated with. But Bird Point is, and I have many, many pictures of that area.
And Bird Point is outside of Anchorage.
Yeah, it's on Turnigan Arm, just past Bird Creek.
And this is a Buddha?
Yeah, at at the fair here, at the Tanana Valley Fair. And that's part of the, I have a justbuddhas.org website and weblog. And every time I see pictures of Buddha, I take pictures of them, like the ones that for sale at Fred Meyer's. It's just seeing where Buddha shows up. But what I like about this one, other than the color and shape, is the magnetic jewelry with no holes in the back and a Buddha. And in a way, sometimes people get offended by Buddha in different situations, but when you really read about Buddha, you should be celebrating that, that Buddha really belongs in every place. It's about real life and real things, not worshipful things.
Do you remember when you started getting interested in Buddhas?
When I was in high school, I had a Buddha on my dashboard. But that was more in response to St. Christopher and as a joke than anything else. I majored in philosophy and read a lot about things like phenomenology and stuff like that. When I first went to Buddha or to Thailand, it was like, oh, I was amazed and too respectful. Water being thrown and this and that. It's a slow evolution and a curiosity. I read about Buddhism all the time, and it relates to the idea of phenomenology and existentialism and not being a jerk. But I'm not sure, it's just a slow evolution.
And why do you take pictures of all the Buddhas for sale?
I think it's funny. I think it's cool, it makes me laugh, and it also it resonates with our culture and just, it just makes me smile. It's cool. And when you walk and you see a Buddha in some place, cool, then I want to go take a picture of it. It's sort of like, it's more than a joke, but it's sort of like a joke. It's not a joke because, like, in the pictures of Buddha in Laos especially are so profoundly beautiful. I mean, they're some of the most beautiful sculptures that I've ever seen. And they're as much Buddha as a Buddha at the State Fair or the Buddha at Fred Meyer. So it's a full appreciation, I guess, of Buddha. You know, so the website is of the beauty and the depth and resonance of the beauty, as well as the mundane popularization and commercialization of it, and which is all part of Buddha.
So the next one is Kramer 1,
yeah.
And Kramer's Field is in Fairbanks.
Yes, and I go there, well, except in the ice storm and when it's below minus 20, almost every day. I have gone for years and have many, many photos there. Like this year, I probably have 3,000 photos. I have to select down to maybe 100 or 200. This just shows the wooden path, and this is a wooden path that was torn down and replaced with a new one. Kramer's Field grows at you. I talked to somebody a couple days ago. I said, what do you say at Kramer's Field? It's boring. Well, it's not boring if you keep going and you keep appreciating and you're seeing the change. And you have different experiences and you discover new things, and it's just a very beautiful place. And it's also the form and the shape of the trees at the different seasons in the spring when the water is there and everything is reflected, the summer, and then the barrenness of the fall, and then the spring where everything is just so stark and almost almost like Halloween with witches' hands reaching out with the way that the beaten down brush reaches out to you. It's a complex and beautiful place.
Okay. So this is Kramer's tune. This is actually taken from your Fairbanks Clouds series.
Yes.
So if you want to go in a little bit about the Fairbanks Clouds as well.
I love to sit and watch clouds form and dissipate. And there's a big thunderstorm coming over Kramer's Field, and it was in the fall. And I saw it coming, and so I went to Kramer's Field and walked out as it, from the Bird Observatory side as it was coming. And it's just beautiful. So, and I thought that would be something that would be common. And then after a while, you realize that the pattern of storms that is one year isn't the pattern of storms for another year, and that I've never really seen that same path of a storm again, you know. And so you have to appreciate each separate storm and realize that it's unique. And I watch clouds and take pictures of them all the time because they're beautiful and they're dramatic and they're intense and they're fascinating. And especially watching them in the summer as they grow and change and dissipate, it's an amazing experience.
So this was in Fairbanks, if you want to explain.
It's,
I guess you could probably explain whose property it is.
Oh, what, John Reese?
Reeves.
And it's an old radar, and he also would make huge ice pillars, and it's near the Alaska Pipeline way station, and it's the melting of one of the ice towers from one of the years, and the radome. And it's a pretty strange picture. And the oddities and the strangeness and the personality of Fairbanks and that is expressed in things like this or in people's cars or yards or the weird house on top of a tower. So what makes Fairbanks special is the expression of personality in so many things that are here. If you go around Clay Street and some of the old buildings and stuff, you just see people. Even though there's not people there, it's what people have done and left. And this is definitely a Fairbanks person. And just also the picture itself, with the structure of the ice and the dome, is just, and the buildings, I think it's just a cool picture. And I go out there often, and then you warn me sometimes when it's a good time to go out there because you go out there to go to work.
This is in Hatcher Pass from
yes.
the 70s, I believe?
No, this is when I went down, what was that, 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
And this is actually when you're driving up Hatcher Pass up by the summit looking back down. And Hatcher Pass in the 70s, I would go there all the time. I worked at a camera repair place, and when I wanted to try out a new camera, I'd go up to Hatcher Pass. And it's still one of the most beautiful places in Alaska for me. Hatcher Pass, Bird Point, and in a much less dramatic way, but in a way that has taken on as much meaning for me, Kramer's Field. But Hatcher Pass, I put on my website, the most beautiful place in Alaska, and I would stand by that. Archangel Valley and Hatcher Pass and stuff.
And Hatcher Pass is north of Anchorage?
Up outside of Palmer, between Palmer and Wasilla, sort of the behind the mountains in the Talkeetna Mountains. You could look down into the valley of a Pioneer Peak and stuff way in the distance. It's a place I want to go again and again.
This is Reindeer.
Yeah, and this was in Nome. I was up there with a youth group from Kukulik Native Association, and they took us out to a reindeer roundup. And they were riding up the reindeer and putting burlap around it, and what they were doing was cutting off the horns. And then both in the color and black and white, it was fascinating. And you'd see the reindeer horns being cut off, and they'd put rubber bands around to stop the bleeding. And sometimes they'd cut too close, and the bleeding would be too much, and it'd be spurting out. And sometimes they would die. And sometimes you'd see, there's a place where I just saw the head of a reindeer lying someplace. I don't know why. And they'd wrestle them down like a rodeo, and then dehorn them, and then put the rubber band on it. And this is just a picture from that series.
Do you know why they removed the horns?
To sell to Korea for an aphrodisiac, I think.
And then also, reindeer aren't indigenous to Alaska, right?
Well, caribou.
But not domesticated.
Yeah, I mean, so they are an art, but in going back to Seward Peninsula, Sheldon Jackson and the history of reindeer and stuff like that, so it fits in. And there's also, I have a friend whose dad named Ricky talked to, whose relative Larry Davis was a reindeer herder, and he told me stories and stuff about things like this. But visually, the color and black and white, it was an amazing experience at all sorts of levels.
And this was taken in the 70s?
Yeah.
This is a Samson?
Yeah. And this is before they tore down all that stuff, and obviously during breakup, when there's still ice and there was an ice skating rink, and I would go there, sort of documenting it before it was gone. But I've also always gone there because it was visually a very strong and interesting place. But I like just the composition of the ice and the Mexican restaurant. And imagine this in 30 years. Then the meaning of this will start resonating again, and the feelings and the emotions and the memories will come back.
And then the meaning to Fairbanks in general?
Yes. I mean, when I hear things that are going, I try to take pictures of them, and I miss stuff like the coal bunker and stuff because I wasn't taking pictures during that time because I was raising kids. But
and Samson was around Fairbanks for decades.
Well, and also these buildings are from the beginning of Fairbanks. You know, I mean, you look at pictures of the Chena Ridge and the steamboats and everything. They're all... these buildings were here. Actually, the cement block outside was sort of added because the wood structure is still inside, or was inside. But independently of that, just the picture itself, like, okay, I go and take a picture to document something, but I'm also taking a picture because something visually is strong and interesting for me. It's not just a shot of a record, it's a shot of how I'm experiencing it.
This is Seattle 1, and this is a more recent photo.
Yeah. And from Pike's Market, Pike Place Market. You're not supposed to say Pike's Place Market. People, I got comments, even though I grew up thinking of it as Pike's Place Market, it's Pike Place Market. And there's a woman with infatuation, and people down below, and foggy day, and... again, sort of the role of sexual stereotype and attraction and what we do and different people and the city and an old building and new building. It's just sort of a rich picture with all sorts of different layers of meaning. But sort of that, I guess there is that theme of the roles that we're asked to take on by the imagery of our society. And then we deny it. Pure infatuation, in fact. Now, that's an interesting idea.
And it's an advertisement for water.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Seattle 2.
And that's just the railroad tracks. And this is an earlier picture, 70s, wandering around. When I think this was when I first really got excited about wandering around. I was gonna catch a ferry back up to Alaska, and I had a Olympus Pen F camera, and I started wandering around all those places that as a youth I was attracted to, and this was one of the pictures that I started. And following those railroad tracks, you sometimes wonder if they split or whatever happened to them, but just the shape and color of it, it's a pretty picture. And it resonates because of the viaduct and all those other things, and the light. It's okay to have a pretty picture.
This is Tacoma One.
Yeah, and this is, I have this in black and white. I'm not sure about whether I like it. I think it in black and white, and it was like a foundation, and the building has been torn down, and you see sort of the connection of the foundation to another building. And some people said that this was tunnels that they used to take Shanghaied workers to boats, because Tacoma had a reputation for Shanghaiing people. I don't know if that's the case, but it's sort of the, and also the way the things are growing, the trees growing out of the derelict stuff, and the way the water is coming. To me, that is a picture that needs to be made black and white, or made to be a little bit more intense. But it's a cool picture, but I would want to do more to it.
I guess my goal with this picture is something you've always told me. It was kind of about nature overgrowing,
yes,
buildings and city things, and why do you have a fascination with that?
Well, just the process of time. And in some of the pictures of Tacoma during this time, up on the top of buildings and in the eaves and stuff, you'll see trees growing and stuff. And this is similar to that, but there's more obvious, more incongruous examples. But it's just sort of also the amazing strength of nature to reimpose itself on man-made projects and activities and endeavor. And in time, nature will resurrect itself from our pretensions.
So this is Tacoma 2.
Yeah, and this is the railroad station before it was renovated. And if you go in, there's pieces of plaster falling from the dome. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. They have resurrected and improved it and made it into a courthouse. And now they question you when you go in to take pictures because it's a courthouse. And I did get to go in there again, and they had to get permission. But in its original state, especially in its deteriorating state, it was a fascinating and invoking place, because also the remnant and the emotion of railroads and the time of railroads. And I grew up in Auburn, where the railroads would come through there. And so when I was here, it was a very emotionally, an emotional place, a memory-filled place, a visually strong place, a beautiful place. And then when I hadn't gone back in many years, and I kept saying, I've got to go to Tacoma and see what's happened there, because it's a strong place. There's many pictures of this that I've taken.
And this photo was taken in the 70s?
Yes. And this is a scanned image that I had scanned when I went through all that. About 7,000 images I scanned over the course of a better part of a year. Whew. Okay.
This is Tacoma 3.
And this is... from a slide, a scan of a slide. The colors are sort of weird, but people like it, and I guess I do too. It is sort of bluish and stuff. An old little Fiat car and a building that's it looks like it's been burnt and broken windows, and it expresses when Tacoma was downtown, people were feeling it was almost like abandoned and falling apart. And I wanted a little Fiat like that. And I'm not to me, this might be better in black and white, but I did definitely, some people responded to it in color, but that's because the bluishness of the scan and the deteriorating negative, or a slide, but the colors are pretty in it.
This is Tacoma 4?
Yeah, and that's just a woman waiting for the bus in Tacoma, and I was with the slide and without, and it captures people's experience of Tacoma, but also the woman, that woman in the time and her hat and the purse and the over here, the Ford turning left. it captures a feeling. People will say that's an accurate description of a moment in time.
And then what's on the other side of the bus?
New tax cemetery.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a cool thing, is that different people add other meanings to things that I might not have resonated to. And that's an example of a rich picture. And also one reason why you don't want to explain a picture. You know, I'm doing some, but not really, like, the profound meaning. I'm explaining how I'm responding to the picture. But that's, other people respond completely different. And that's part of the joy of photography.
And so this is part of your Tacoma 70s, and there's very few people that you see in the Tacoma. I don't know if that's meaningful, but when I saw this, it's one of the only people pictures you have, and it seems like she's going out to the cemetery.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I didn't see it that way. A lot of times I'm a morning person, and so I get up early in the morning and do my wandering in the morning. But also during this time in Tacoma, a lot of people weren't down there. But so it was a combination of my morning inclination, and also at this time that it was a pretty tough place down there. But if you go to tough places in the morning, the people who are tough are probably sleeping.
And the only other place that I saw was just Lac Peoples and Fairbanks, but that's also because it's a much smaller town.
Some of the Seattle ones in the 70s and stuff are that way, because again, I'm doing it in the morning. Not always.
And so you're not trying to avoid people, it's just coincidence.
Oh, I'm an introvert, so I always try to avoid people, but but no. I mean, or immerse myself in people too for sometimes. That's the end.
Yeah, it's the end. Is there any other photos that you can think of that you'd want to add?
There's a million, but no, because I think part of this is the ones that you selected, and then if I start doing it, then it becomes a different thing. I mean, there's one other picture of a person here. It's a woman from the back with an umbrella and rain, and that captures Tacoma. You don't see the person, but you see the umbrella. I would catch the Greyhound bus down to Tacoma early in the morning. I would usually stay at the Roosevelt in Seattle, and so that's when I would wander around and take these pictures. So I just wanted to say I really appreciate that you've done this.
And so I guess something I forgot to bring up earlier is that I explained to you what a signature story is as part of my class, and then you had three ideas of what a signature story would be for you to explain creativity.
Okay.
And so if you could tell those again.
Let me just do two of them, because they're more signature stories rather than sort of philosophical. And one, I remember Saltwater State Park in Seattle. I must have been 16 or 17. I drove up there, and it was a pretty place. I like to go on the beach and beachcomb and stuff. And there's an island and stuff out in front. And I remember for some reason I was lying down on a log, and I looked at the beach and the scene and the island upside down, and it became three-dimensional and alive. And that experience of looking at something backwards or looking at something upside down is a fundamental idea for me, that sense of wonder that can come if you see something in a different context. I'm going to tell a different story that I've told you, but not now. Is I had a teacher my freshman year in college, and he was an English teacher, and he said that the only way you can get an A and a paper in my class is if it interests me. If it's perfect and it's well written and everything, the best you can get is a B. And so every assignment that he would make, you had to take the assignment and then you had to think about how to look at it differently. And I remember getting an A on one paper that was completely out of surprise about why I hated a town called Cleellum. But that way of looking at things stuck with me, such that the next English class I took, the teacher asked me, how come you always take a different view of things? How come you always write a paper that isn't the common way. But to me, that was one of the most important lessons I learned from any instructor, was that idea of taking it and then looking at it in a different way, in your own way or in a different way. Okay, the other sort of signature story, and it was many years ago, I was in Seward, and it was walking down this road, and there was sort of a mound of dirt to block it off, and I walked up on the top of the dirt and looked down, and there was a dead dog. I turned around and walked away, and I said to myself, stop. My goal is to take pictures of things that I feel about. I need to go back and take a picture of the dead dog. And I think that when we take pictures, it isn't just of the positive things or of the beautiful things, but it should be of the things that make us feel afraid and that make us feel angry and make us feel hurt and make us feel bored. Wherever there's a feeling, there's a photo. So those would be three signature stories, and they're all sort of related. Am I done?
And what about the other one with the
everything I see
pile
is
of dirt? Did you want to share that one?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. John Udy. He's a picture framer, and he did like Morris Graves and Mark Tobey, and my dad's best friend. And I remember telling him at one point that I wasn't creative. And he told me tell me all the things you could do with a pile of dirt. And I started listing all these things off. And the fundamental end of that is I realized I was creative. Quite a few years ago, and years later, I happened to be catching a bus up to Vancouver to take photos, and he was on the bus to Anacortes. He never drove a car, and I got to thank him for that, because that experience of him asking me about the pile of dirt and to imagine all the things I could do with it is where I first acknowledged that I was creative. It's sort of amazing how what simple experiences can have such a profound effect. And I was thankful that I could actually share that with him. And I also got to share that with his daughter later, too. So before that, I just assumed I wasn't creative. I still am not sure. You don't go around saying you're creative. You just be creative. Because if you start saying you are creative, then it becomes pretentious.
So
thank you for asking about that one.
Is there anything you'd want to add? Anything else?
Oh, hours of stuff. No, that's good. That's good.
Okay. All right, so I'll thanks, and I'll stop recording now.
Okay.